Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
So we're going to take an hour here to discuss that, both from the scientific standpoint and also from the media coverage standpoint. So if you have any questions or comments about this, text them to 87870, and I'll pass them along to our guests. The first of which is Arnold Monto. He's a professor of epidemiology and global public health at the University of Miami. Good morning, sir.
I've got to check your geography. University of Michigan. Very different from Miami.
Must be a typo, sir. I apologize. It is different. A different climate. A cracked production staff on top of that one. A difference in climate as well. Are you near that flooded area at all or not?
No, that's about 100 miles north of us, fortunately.
God bless those poor people.
Yeah.
Let's start with, and I apologize again for that, let's talk about the Hong Kong flu, because I was talking to a neighbor yesterday. I'm not old enough to remember it, but they told me their only remembrance was that they closed school for a week, which is far different than what happened here. Let's talk about the Hong Kong flu. What was it? Where did it come from, etc.?
Well, the first identification was in Hong Kong. And remember, China was closed at that time. And it was probably circulating in China for some time before it got to Hong Kong. And it was identified there in the, maybe July of 1968, without a whole lot of plane travel. It didn't get to the U.S. until about the same time that our seasonal flu usually shows up. And that's in October, November, and it peaked around Christmas.
It's interesting when you talk about China being closed because, you know, here with novel coronavirus, we're not quite sure what happened with Hong Kong. We have no idea what was going on in China, correct?
Well, we have ideas, so there are all sorts of rumors out there, but we'll probably never have clarity. We do know that SARS, which is a very closely related virus, emerged in the Guangzhou area in 2002 from live animal markets. So we do have that history, and probably the same thing happened here. But what happened was we didn't learn about how bad it was for probably a month.
And I guess I was, maybe I confused myself here, but in terms of in 1968, there
was
no
flu.
Information.
Yeah, but that was flu, which is very different from what we've got here because this is a different virus which is behaving in a very weird way in terms of hot spots. Flu, when it starts going, becomes active everywhere. This virus picks hot spots.
So for people, and again, I'm getting confused with the, you're talking about coronavirus when you
I'm COVID-19. Talking about coronavirus,
yeah.
Right.
So was there really any comparison to be made other than that both were pandemics?
It really was not a good, it isn't a good comparison because that was considered a rather a moderate pandemic. Only part of the virus changed. So there was some immunity in the population. What's going on now is this is a novel virus there's little, if any, immunity in the population, and that's why you're seeing these very active spread when it spreads.
Doctor, if you could, for those of us that are like maybe 1% as smart as you are, so I'm just trying to how to make it a practical comparison with what we're going through now, and for people that think the two are the same and that it killed the same or predominantly affected the same people in the same age demographic, 65 years and older, it killed 100,000 people, I think, in the United States. Maybe from our level on a street, what is the difference? And I understand in the lab it's one thing, and we'll get to that a little bit as well. But what if we were back in 1968, how would our experience with that flu be different than it is with this novel coronavirus?
Well, the big difference was, except for a few places, we didn't have healthcare systems overwhelmed. I think the thing that really scared people this time is the fact that the healthcare systems were overwhelmed. We also didn't have this very specific increased mortality in older individuals. With this pandemic, it seems to be hitting older people, and if they get infected, they are getting severe disease, and it's lasting for a long time. Typical flu, even a pandemic flu, you'll be in the hospital and either survive or be discharged in maybe 10 days, 2 weeks, and this is going on. People are in the hospital for 3-4 weeks, which is overwhelming the healthcare system.
So what is the difference, if you can slowly, between the novel coronavirus and what was it? The Hong Kong flu was the H3N2. Do I got my numbers
right? That was the H3N2. And you see, before that, since you put me on the wavelength of the number of the flu, we had H2N2, and the N didn't change, which gave some level of immunity in the population. I think a better comparator is an event 100 years ago, the 1918 flu. Mm-hmm. And that went around the world. It killed more than 500,000 Americans at that time when the population was probably 30% of what we have now. So it would be a couple of million in terms of the U.S. population. And that's a much better comparator than 1968 flu.
So when it comes to at the microscopic level or whatever, and bear with me if I'm not using the right words because science was not my thing and still isn't, but when it comes to the flu and this novel coronavirus, how did they develop? And I know there's like probably a semester's worth of material I'm asking you to cover, but why is one so much more dangerous than the other in composition, is it? And where do these things come from? Because I believe some of these things are still around from 1950, 40, et cetera, right? Are these things that are always there and then we develop immunity to them, or do they all of a sudden develop jump species, et cetera?
Okay, let me just give you, go into the lab just a tiny bit.
Okay.
We have coronaviruses every winter that cause pretty much common colds. And flu on a regular basis, which causes much more severe disease, which puts people in the hospital on a yearly basis. This coronavirus is very different from our regular coronaviruses, and it's come from animals, and we have had no experience with this virus before. With flu, it modifies every year, but we've got some experience with it. So even though it picks out and is severe in some people, it is only spotty in its occurrence because some people are immune to it. This virus, nobody is immune to it. And that's the basic difference. We really don't understand why, for example, young people are not getting the severe disease with this virus. That's very unusual. So there are some unusual features. And because it's so new, we haven't worked it out yet in terms of a lot of the details.
So when it comes to the coronaviruses that we see every year that cause the common cold, when it comes to the flus that we see every year, they don't discriminate in terms of, and I mean, you know what I'm saying, in terms of age, or people are not as susceptible from those as they are to the novel coronavirus?
Well, with flu, we've got a very good understanding. We've lived with flu. We've had the virus identified in the 1930s. And this is a totally new virus. With flu, we know that school-age children drive epidemics, but they don't get severe disease. They usually get moderate disease. Older people have immunity. They're less likely to get infected, but when they get infected, they're more likely to get severe complications. With this virus, it's all different.
Let me take a quick break, if we can, Professor, while we, you know, we've taken a couple of steps into the lab, and a little bit of the information has made us woozy now because our head's spinning.
Sorry.
No. You're doing a great job. It's us. It's not you. So we're going to wrap our heads around this, and then we'll pick it up here when we come back. Is that okay?
Fine.
Thank you. Dr. Arnold Manto is our guest, Professor of Epidemiology and Global Public Health at the University of Michigan. As in, go blue, we'll be back, WWL. An apology to Dr. Arnold Manto. We misidentified the university, so here we go. Let's make it up. Dr. Arnold Manto, Professor of Epidemiology and Global Public Health at the University of Michigan. And come to think of it, Doctor, if I had known it was Michigan, I wouldn't have talked about Tom Brady splitting his pants. But what are you going to do?
Well, I hear the victors in the background, so you've got it all right now.
There we go. When it comes to comparisons, because you see it all over social media about people saying, and we've already, you can use the radio.com app if you've not yet downloaded it and use the rewind feature to see what Dr. Manto had to say earlier. But he was saying basically that it's almost a false comparison to compare what's going on now with novel coronavirus, COVID-19, to the Hong Kong flu, because it's kind of apples and oranges. The real apples to apples comparison would be the pandemic of 1918.
Yeah, because that was a devastating, it was global, and really what we're experiencing now is something that's gone all over the world in a relatively short period of time. So much has changed since then. You know, we've always debated, could 1918 come occur again? Because with that kind of flu, bacterial infections take over, and it was bacterial infections that killed a lot of people. And people speculated, okay, we've got antibiotics now. Well, will we be able to prevent deaths with antibiotics? What we're seeing with this virus is the virus is what's killing. Antibiotics don't seem to work. So it's really a very different kind of disease.
In terms of medically where we were in 1918, I'm in the middle of, I think it's John Barry's book about the Great Pandemic.
Right.
Which is an excellent
book. A local guy.
Yeah, really, and an excellent book. And he's done so much good work with Rising Tide and other great books that he's written. But it's amazing, I think, to read that book, to realize how we take a lot of today's medical advances for granted, when relatively speaking, in the history of mankind, we've come a long way in a short period. And along those lines, would we have been able to make a lot of... Here's what I'm trying to ask my own clumsy way, Doctor. If you're comparing and contrasting 1918 to now... have we repeated some of the same mistakes from 1918 and did not learn? Does it go to preparation? And if we knew in 1918 what we know now, I guess scientifically we would have made it a lot, it would have been a lot less devastating.
The problem is 2020 hindsight is very good. And when people say, oh, if we had locked down earlier, then we would have saved 36,000 lives. Problem is that when you are dealing with something novel, you have people who are convinced that they know what's going to happen. But in reality, it's a very tricky situation. Mm-hmm. And with this virus, it's even trickier, because we got things like super spreaders, which we don't usually have with flu, where somebody, for some unknown reason, can spread to 40 people when it, typically one person spreads, if that many, to one other person or two. So this is a very tricky virus to deal with. I think to me, the responses were proper, and you did the same thing in the New Orleans area, because the thing you can't deal with is the medical system being overrun. And that is the clearest part of the response here and the necessity to do something when that's happening.
How, when you look at video on the internet or television or wherever, and you see like what's happening on Memorial Day weekend, or you see other states that are opening up, no social distancing. I'm noticing a lot less people wearing masks. Does that make you shake your head and kind of worry deeply, like, uh-oh, this is not looking good, or not necessarily?
Well, it makes me worry, but what I think we are living through is a great experiment, where some, for one reason or another, and I don't want to go into the reasons, some places are opening probably before they should, and others, other regions that are much more risk-averse, are not. And I think we will see what the best solution is. And if this virus sticks around, as most people think it will be able, we hope, to learn as we go forward. We're learning on the job with this virus. And a lot of our precedents don't work terribly well.
What you just said confirms what I've been thinking and saying, which is, in essence, this is a living, breathing experiment we're watching in different areas.
Absolutely.
And along those lines, and let's leave all the politics and everything else out of it, if we have a second wave, and hear me out here, because it might not make sense at first, but if we have a second wave and then no containment measures are taken and the so-called herd immunity plan, or whatever you want to call it, strategy is followed, well, then it seems to me, my fear is that the same people that we protected due to the lockdown measures, etc., would be at risk with a second wave uncontained, and as a result, everything we will have done for the most part initially would have been for nothing. Does that make any sense at all?
It does completely. Okay. And being in the older high-risk category, and somebody who likes to travel for work and for pleasure, I'm worried about what is going to go on short-term. But what is going to change is we will have better therapeutics as well as better vaccines. And I'm not sure that herd immunity is going to be the answer. Our flu vaccines are good, but they're not great. But they do prevent hospitalizations and deaths. And once we're in a better state, we can move more quickly or more appropriately. Right now, the lockdown is a blunt instrument, but it was all we had, because nothing else was available.
I think that's an excellent way to put it. excuse me, an understandable way to put it, that that's all we had. What are you going to do? We don't know. This is uncharted territory here, so we're going to go ahead and raise the bridges, right, and fill them out and hope for the best?
Exactly. And in 1918, they had this city, Philadelphia, which had a big bond drive and had very severe death rates. Other places, people tended to stay home. It wasn't a policy, but people in most places, but people locked down because that's what you do. And we know, for example, places that locked down, like Hong Kong early, not only did COVID go away, but also flu. They were at the end of a flu outbreak because person-to-person transmission, if you're not in contact with other people, you're going to cut it down.
The good thing, as you say that, I think, is that if there is a second wave and for whatever reason there is no government interaction, then maybe people will be smart enough on their own. And I think the thing in Sweden has been over-exaggerated somewhat in terms of their approach with herd immunity, because a lot of people had the common sense to kind of self-isolate, did they not?
Right. And the thing about herd immunity is this virus is spotty in terms of who gets infected and who not. And we're not seeing a whole lot of immunity after a wave goes through. Even in New York, they did antibody tests, which should tell us who is infected and not, and it was no more than 10 to 15%, even in the heavy areas. So we're not going to have a lot of immunity in the population. And that's one of the reasons some of us worry about the second wave, because we don't have a whole lot of immunity in the population. So there's a lot to worry about, but let's hope that going forward we have better understanding. And I think there's going to be better understanding in terms of how to treat this. People were learning on the job. They didn't even know exactly how to use ventilators. People are it's not like other infections. It's a weird infection where there's blood clots and strokes and all sorts of things occurring with this virus.
And as a result, for people that, for whatever reason, are of the ilk to say, well, first you told me this, then you told me that, it is an unknown, and you're learning as you go, and that's all science can do. Accurate?
That's all we can do at this point, and everybody's working on it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time, and I honestly do appreciate the work you and your colleagues do to make the world a better place, and I mean that sincerely. Thank you, Doctor. Hope we get to talk to you again.
Right. Bye.
Bye. Dr. Arnold Monteau, Professor of Epidemiology and Global Public Health at the University of Michigan. And interesting to hear him say that, well, really, yeah, they were both pandemics, but to compare Hong Kong flu to this, apples and oranges. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the media aspect of this and the attention in social media that this plandemic foolishness is getting. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us. Text us at 87087. If you have anything you want to add to the conversation, I'll throw it in. Coming back in a flash, WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.